Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. Sometime this summer, the U.S. Senate is expected to decide on the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. There's great concern over this nomination for several reasons, particularly Kavanaugh's overly expansive view of executive power and presidential legal immunity. Think less legal scholar, more obsequious toad in a black robe. But there's a lot more at stake than just the question of whether the current president can be tried for high crimes and misdemeanors while he's still occupying the Oval Office. Kavanaugh's views on women's rights, particularly his opposition to reproductive rights and to allowing women access to safe legal abortion services, could lead to not just the overturning of Roe v. Wade, but seismic changes in the legal landscape as regards reproductive rights and civil rights of all people. On July 18th, the organization National Advocates for Pregnant Women held a webinar on the topic Overturning Roe v. Wade, More Than Abortion Is at Stake. Participating in that webinar were the founder and executive director of NAPW, Lynn Paltrow, and acclaimed scholar of race, gender, and the law, Professor Dorothy E. Roberts, with the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Let's get to that audio.
I'm Dorothy Roberts. I am a professor at University of Pennsylvania in the law school and also in sociology and Africana studies, and a longtime advocate for reproductive justice. I go way back to the late 1980s when I began my research on the state regulation of Black women's bodies, which ended up in my book, Killing the Black Body. And Lynn and I have worked together all that time. In fact, I just pulled out an article that I wrote as a result of a conference that I remembered was the first time Lynn and I worked together back at Rutgers Law School, where I was teaching at the time in 1989. So we are, what is that, 30 years or something? I think it is 30 years of advocacy. And what links Lynn and me together is our work on behalf of pregnant women who want to have their babies and continue their pregnancies to term, and pointing out the way in which state control has intensified and how that harms all of us, and how that must be part of advocacy for reproductive justice. And so I'm really thrilled to be able to join with Lynn today to talk about this aspect of the possibility of overturning Roe and why the principles in Roe versus Wade, the principles for reproductive justice, are important for all pregnant people.
Thank you, Dorothy. And I'm Lynn Paltrow, the founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. We are a nonprofit advocacy organization. A core understanding is that the people who have abortions are the same people who at some point overwhelmingly give birth and become parents. They are also people who experience miscarriages and pregnancy losses, and they are all people who have benefited from Roe v. Wade. National Advocates for Pregnant Women is the leading organization that provides criminal defense on behalf of women who are being targeted for arrests and detentions and other mechanisms of state control because they're pregnant or because of a pregnancy outcome, whether it's a miscarriage, a stillbirth, or a pregnancy loss, or an abortion. There's been a lot already, given since the announcement that Justice Kennedy was going to resign, and then President Trump's announcement of Brett Kavanaugh as his nominee, a lot of concern about what will happen to many cases, and particularly Roe v. Wade. And so far, most of the focus has been on what will happen to access to abortion, what will happen to the women who can't get abortions, what will happen to women who live in some states versus others. What this webinar focuses on is the fact that it is not on abortion, but the people who sometimes need abortion. And they are the same people who always need to be treated as full constitutional persons with full human rights, including access to all the health care that they need. Roe v. Wade not only recognized reproductive rights, that the 6 million people who become pregnant every year in the United States, all of whom benefit from that, Roe also explicitly rejected the argument that fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses are constitutional persons at any stage of development. And in doing that, the court affirmed that women at all stages of pregnancy are constitutional persons whose lives and health are paramount.
Yes, so in that context of waiting to see who Trump's Supreme Court nominee would be, and thinking about the implications for that confirmation and the possibility that Roe could be overturned and all of that protection for women as full human beings entitled to full rights, whether or not they're pregnant, might be in jeopardy. I was invited to speak on the Ali Velshi show on MSNBC. I had already been invited to be there on the 4th of July. I assumed to talk about some aspect of social justice and how the 4th of July represents a contradiction of the principles of equality and justice. And it happened to be in the midst of all of this talk about who the next Supreme Court justice would be and the implications for Roe. It also happened that the day before, on July 3rd, I had been engaged in a Twitter conversation about whether or not it was possible that women would be arrested for abortions if Roe versus Wade were overturned. And Aziza Ahmad had tweeted that I had argued for so long that some mothers, Black and Latina, were always deemed less sympathetic and had been prosecuted for being pregnant. And I chimed in that, yes, it was absolutely realistic to predict that women will be prosecuted and imprisoned for having abortions. And part of my argument for that, which, you know, I put in a tweet, was that women are already being locked up for miscarriages and stillbirths, starting with women of color, and that we have to see these ways of criminalizing pregnant women, whether it's for abortion or for pregnancy losses or for being pregnant while engaging in some conduct, that those are all related. And so when I appeared the next day on the Ali Velshi show, he read my tweet on air and asked me about it. He also noted that in support of what I had tweeted, President Trump himself had said that women should be punished for having abortions. And so I explained what I was saying in that tweet. If Roe is overturned, as Lynn has said, states will be free to make abortion a crime from the moment of conception, or maybe even, you know, the possibility that a woman person might conceive. Women are already arrested for being pregnant and engaging in some conduct allegedly risky to a fetus and for pregnancy losses. So certainly if Roe is overturned, those would only increase because it would give prosecutors more leeway more legal leeway to make pregnancy a crime. Already, there have been prosecutions, a whole host of them, in South Carolina way back in the early 1990s, late 1980s. Cornelia Whitner was convicted of child neglect because she was pregnant while using drugs, but because of her pregnancy, the South Carolina Supreme Court upheld her conviction for harming a viable fetus, equating a viable fetus with a child in 1997. Regina McKnight spent 8 years in prison for experiencing a stillbirth that was called a homicide by child abuse. Purvi Patel was convicted of feticide that was overturned, but her conviction for child neglect was sustained. So there are, you know, I could go on and on, and Lynn will say more about the women that that National Advocates for Pregnant Women has represented. And so women who terminate their pregnancies or are suspected of terminating their pregnancies, a woman who has a miscarriage, who's suspected of doing something to cause it, those people could be charged with a crime and potentially arrested and locked up from the moment of conception if Roe is overturned. And in addition, all pregnant people would be at risk because the norms that Lynn was talking about, that pregnant people have equal rights, would be overturned as well. And so then the idea that people who are pregnant have fewer rights and are subject to state control, greater state control, because of their pregnancy or the potential to be pregnant, would be now part of the law. And so I felt I was just stating the facts of arrests and imprisonment that have already occurred, and the logic of if Roe is overturned, obviously these would happen even more because there would be more legal basis for them. I thought that was pretty logical and self-explanatory and rooted in evidence, but the reaction that I got from right-wing pundits and bloggers and people on Twitter, anti-abortion folks, was that I was lying. I was a lunatic. So the Daily Caller published this and tweeted that I was saying that the next U.S. Supreme Court justice would put women in jail for miscarriages, and chicks on the right said I was said that I was accusing them of being lunatics for criminalizing abortion, but actually they would not ever support blaming a woman if it wasn't obviously her fault. And then we could go to the next one, that I was lying because this had never happened before, that women were jailed for miscarriages. And then the Washington Examiner said, well, if, you know, we who support Roe see someone so much as looking at the ruling funny, we lose our composure and entirely succumb to outlandish, feverish fantasies pulled out of the wildest corners of our minds. So they were portraying what I said as if it was there was no shred of facts to support it, that these arrests actually were not occurring, had never occurred, and that there was absolutely no fear that women would be prosecuted, and really was not only for miscarriages, but for other pregnancy losses, or that there was any risk to women being criminalized for being pregnant.
You are listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We're listening to portions of a webinar that was presented on July 18th on the topic of overturning Roe v. Wade, More Than Abortion Is at Stake. Participants included Lynn Paltrow and Professor Dorothy E. Roberts. Audio comes to us courtesy of National Advocates for Pregnant Women.
But we want to start with, if Dorothy is right that there are likely to be even more arrests, and I will get to the evidence of the ones that have already happened, why is it, how is it that many of the organizations that oppose abortion continue to reassure their base that, of course, even if Roe is overturned, if abortion is made a crime, if it is illegal, the women who have abortions won't go to jail, they won't be treated as criminals. And here are just two examples of statements various leaders of anti-abortion organizations have made. No pro-lifer would ever want to punish. We only have compassion. And the way that they speak to their own base and others as well is to start out with the claim that before Roe, no woman was arrested for having an abortion. So after Roe, when it was in the power of the states, after Roe, no woman will be arrested for having an abortion. But that claim is simply not true. Look at the case of Shirley Wheeler. In 1971, Shirley was living in Florida. She got pregnant. Her doctor advised her it would be, for health reasons, she should have an abortion. It was illegal in Florida, as in most states still in 1971. And she went, found an illegal abortion provider. And it was not a completed abortion. She was hemorrhaging. She went to the hospital, and they suspected her of having had an abortion. And rather than give her confidential care, rather than guarantee her all of her health and confidentiality, they called the police. They reported her as being suspected of having an illegal abortion. Police came to her bedside, interrogated her. When she did not reveal the name of the person who performed the abortion, they arrested her. Not for an illegal abortion, but for the crime of manslaughter with a potential sentence of 20 years. She went to trial. She was convicted. She wasn't sentenced to 20 years. She was, however, sentenced to 2 years of probation with the kind of conditions that many people in the criminal justice system face. She had to get a job. She couldn't stay out overnight. She couldn't enter a bar, couldn't hang out with people of harmful character. Had to pay the court over $500. And they gave her an ultimatum: stay in Florida and marry the man she was living with, or in less than a week, or within a week, return to North Carolina to live with a different man, her brother. That's just one example. There were other arrests before Roe. 18 states at the time had express penalties for women having self-abortions or participating in an abortion. Today, there are 6 states that still have those kinds of laws. Women were arrested for aiding and abetting. They were arrested for participating in a conspiracy to have an abortion. But there's a certain truth in what is said because we live in a very different time than the 1970s. In the 1970s, very few people were being incarcerated for anything, and very few women in particular. So it wasn't that women weren't being arrested just for illegal abortions. They basically weren't being arrested. This wasn't the way our society was dealing with a whole variety of public health and social welfare issues. And you can see from this chart how the number of people who are incarcerated has so dramatically increased from the 1970s to, in this slide, 2006. We see a 500% increase in incarceration over the last 40 years, 2.2 million people in prisons and jails. And this is not the result of population growth. Between 1970 and 2000, the U.S. population rose by less than 40%, yet the number of people in prisons and jails rose by more than 400%. And this is a slide specifically about women. So any hesitation that there once was before Roe was decided to incarcerate women, most of whom are mothers, has no longer exists. How did this come about? What are the social, political, legal things that happened? Among them were the war on drugs. And here are some books that give you the history and context concerning the war on drugs that put into place so many new ways for states to surveil people, control people, drug test people. And by the way, if you've ever had a drug test for a job or anything else, remember, they can also test that urine for pregnancy. So there are mechanisms, including much more available wiretapping and other things that just didn't exist in 1973. And so we now have a system where so many women, the greatest growing number of people who are incarcerated are in fact women, most of whom are mothers. And in addition to this overarching system where we now allow companies, private corporations, to profit from incarcerated people, immigrants in detention centers, prisoners in jails and prisons across the country, and other ways of profiting from incarcerated people, we also have many more things that have been criminalized. And among those, before Roe, there was no such crime as feticide. 38 states now have that crime on the books. So prosecutors have many, many crimes to choose from if they want to arrest a woman in relationship to her pregnancy. And in fact, we have documented numerous arrests. Our study, peer-reviewed, people can argue about it, but we've got the documentation. People in my office really want me to get rid of the hard files, but I see people don't believe us. These arrests have happened, 413 cases. Between 1973 and 2005, and we know that to be an undercount because of the way of the lack of attention to these cases. We also know that the arrests target particular groups of people. 72% in our study were poor, low income. 59% of the women were women of color, and grossly disproportionately, 52% were African American. We have continued to document arrests, and we know that since our study stopped, or the numbers in our study stopped in 2005, we've been able to document at least 800 more cases. So this, everything Dorothy said is absolutely true and very well documented. One of the things that we have to remember is that among those arrests were women before 2005 who were accused of having unlawful abortions, even after Roe. And in the last few years, there have been a number of arrests of women accused of having unlawful abortions under existing laws like Idaho's that continue to criminalize self-abortion. Other crimes, as you've heard in the Purvi Patel case, feticide, attempted feticide, and various other crimes, including concealing birth, have been brought and actually have happened. And there has been a resounding silence from the anti-abortion groups who claim they don't want to see women go to jail, but apparently they have no problem with seeing these people go to prisons and jails. Here are other headlines of recent cases in Virginia and in Arkansas and elsewhere. Now, NAPW has participated in the defense of many of these women and supported them. And most of the time, we have been able to get those charges overturned, reversed, sometimes, however, only after someone's been incarcerated for a very long time. Part of the reason we've been able to have these victories is because Roe is on the books, because Roe says that you cannot treat fertilized eggs, embryos, and fetuses as separate persons, and by doing that, subtract women themselves from the community of constitutional persons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even the Cornelia Whitner case, where the Supreme Court of South Carolina upheld her conviction for child abuse, the court said, we can uphold it because it's a viable fetus. We could, you know, because she was pregnant with a viable fetus when she engaged in this allegedly risky conduct. But what if Roe were overturned? Then the logic would say, we can arrest women for being pregnant while engaging in some conduct supposedly risky to the fetus from the moment of conception.
And if I may interrupt and just build on that, we know that 15 to 20 or 25% of pregnancies end in miscarriage and stillbirth. By becoming pregnant, a woman is endangering a fertilized egg and
Exactly.
The whole idea of pregnancy is as a form of harm is part of a larger defamation of women, an attack on our fundamental equality that people have not yet really fully accounted for.
Absolutely. And there's no difference. And especially if we move all the way to the beginning of a pregnancy and include taking abortion pills or any kind of conduct engaged in while pregnant, all the range of possibilities, including, as you said, miscarriages, stillbirths. I agree with you. It makes being pregnant a crime. And we can see that prosecutors will actually go after pregnant people and arrest them. So that was the point I was making. And I think your evidence, Lynn, and the work you're doing, it's just irrefutable.
That was from a webinar on the implications of overturning Roe v. Wade. The speakers were Lynn Paltrow, founder and executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women, and Dorothy E. Roberts, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Law and author of Killing the Black Body, Race, Reproduction, and the Meaning of Liberty. That full webinar is available online through the NAPW website, advocatesforpregnantwomen.org. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you've been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline at the KBOO website at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like and share it with friends. Many thanks to Professor Dorothy E. Roberts, Lynn Paltrow, and the National Advocates for Pregnant Women. A heartfelt thank you to our engineers, Danielle Parks and Mike Fataklis. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for joining us. You make it all worth it. For Prison Pipeline, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
Sometimes so long. I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard.